I am so excited that for 2024, Your Brand Amplified is proudly sponsored by one of my favorite platforms, Simplified. This AI-driven platform is a game changer for design and video content. With Simplified, I can effortlessly transform lengthy videos, such as my podcast, into engaging, shareable clips and streamline workflows with an intuitive subtitle generator. For designers out there, you can explore the AI-powered image generator, create compelling presentations, and design eye-catching YouTube thumbnails with ease. Revolutionize your creative process at simplify.com with a free trial. Now let's dive into today's guest.
Welcome to Your Brand Amplified, the podcast where we interview marketers, publicists, and brands to learn their stories, what makes them tick, and tips and tricks that make a difference.
This is a very interesting discussion we're about to have. The world of ads is really hard for everybody to understand. The platforms say they make it really easy, but I've been learning there are a lot of buttons that you shouldn't use because they won't do the things that you want them to do necessarily. So Jason Wojo of Wojo Media is here to tell us a little bit about his journey, his success, and maybe give you a few helpful hints on what to do or not to do when you're using ads for your process.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Yeah, thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah. So how did you get into being a digital ads maestro?
So back in, I was actually in culinary school at one point in my life.
Really?
Yeah, I have no idea how to cook now. I have no freaking clue. I haven't cooked or had a home-cooked meal in probably 6 years. So like I was in culinary school because I was working at a restaurant when I was in high school. And my boss was like, hey, you might as well go to culinary school. So I listened because I had no self-awareness. I didn't really know what I wanted to do in my life. So I wound up going to culinary school, and it was really snowy upstate New York. That's where I'm originally from.
Okay.
And I was there, and it was snowing, and I was shoveling my car out of the snow one day, and I found this, like, next to my ice scraper, there was this big box, like a shoe box. And I opened it, and I forgot I brought, like, all my Pokemon cards with me. And I was curious, as I was, because I was a lot younger. I was more innocent back then. So I took the box upstairs and I started like looking at all the cards and I started realizing like, wow, these are like, really high in value. So I go on eBay, I start flipping them. I learned how to do all like the product descriptions and taking the pictures and using all the product titles, all this fun stuff. Like it was very small side hustle stuff. Did that, wind up dropping out of culinary school because I didn't go to class at all. I was too busy flipping Pokemon cards.
Oh my gosh.
Playing Mario Kart with my friends and honestly just like drinking my entire freshman year away. So I basically dropped out, moved back in with my parents, and I went to business school because I just like became more business minded with the flipping on eBay and whatnot. I started making decent money with it. Like to a college kid, $2,000 a month was a lot.
Yeah.
So I was doing about $2,000 a month on that. And then I was like, all right, like what else do I want to do? I was in business school. I wind up working 3 jobs on top of eBay flipping and playing college tennis. Yeah, I know that sounds insane. But my days were literally 6:30 a.m. to about 9:15-ish at night after tennis was over. And that's just what I did because I was just really hungry. I saw the way that my parents lived and like I just never wanted to live like that ever again. So I'm in business school now and I am basically learning about all the things that you don't do in the real world. And I started getting curious while I was at one of my jobs. I was like an assistant at a life insurance company called New York Life. And I was just like going through YouTube videos for a tutorial I was doing for a software. And like, I found Ty Lopez's video with the whole like, yo, here in my garage, like probably the most iconic ad in the entire internet. I wind up buying that course for $9.97, which was a lot to me at the time. What? I bought it, wind up going through it. I started pitching local businesses. I was just driving around doing barbershops, restaurants, like home service businesses, stuff that was like decently good ticket, not like, you know, cheap cafes where it's like $4 a transaction. And it's hard for me to keep a client, stuff like that. So, you know, I wind up doing that. I got about 10 clients on like $300 a month, social media management. And I just did like 7-day free trials and I would just pitch them after. And then I wind up saving money for like 3 years. I was still working with the same 10 clients. And then I wind up moving because my dad wanted rent for me. And I was like, I don't want to pay you guys rent because I don't really like want to live here anymore. Like I hated New York. I'd rather live in the city, but we didn't live in New York City. So why not just being like, hey, I'm just going to go to Orlando because when I was a kid, we went on one vacation, which was a cruise and we got off at Fort Lauderdale one day at like one of the ports and I saw these palm trees and I'm like, yo, these are the coolest things ever. Like when I make money, I want to live by a palm tree. So I wound up moving and I was living in a college dorm house. I rented a room out of the dorm house. well, not dorm house, but like a college house. It was off campus and it was like $750 a month, whatever it was. And I was living there for about maybe 2 years, and that's when I built the business. And I got it to like 20-30K a month. And then after that, then I moved to Tampa, and then that's when everything like kind of went out of control. The growth was insane after I got my first supercar, because I was using that in all the marketing. And then that took the brand to a whole nother level. And then I built like my team, and then I found a CEO, and then now we're here. So yeah.
So out of a passion for video gaming and Pokemon, you completely changed the trajectory of your life.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it was a cool skill to learn. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. If you're in like college right now or high school and you're looking for a good way to get into the business niche, like if you know like trends and how to price cards and beating bids, like that's actually a really good skill to learn, because you're basically just learning like price indexing and also like price anchoring. Like that's actually like a really cool skill. I mean, just the way the market moves, like being able to see trends before they hit, it's actually a really cool skill set.
So, yeah. No, absolutely. Now, did you finish business school or did you end up leaving because you already had your business?
Yeah, so I wound up finishing business school. I was afraid of leaving because my parents were so on my case about like finishing school. I just didn't want to like upset them or make them aggravated. I just wanted to like do my due diligence and like keep my parents happy. The other thing that I stayed in college for was just the honest truth is just like to be sociable. One of the biggest skills that I think I learned from college was like just sales and like being able to talk to people and be in circles and like jump from conversation to conversation. And like I had my fair share of fun in college, and like that was a skill that was definitely good for sales reasons. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of people, when they go to college, they just focus on like, you know, a lot of people do go to school to like be sociable and party and all that. But like I looked at it a different way. I was like, hey, I can still be sociable, but like I need to be sociable universally. And like what I mean by that is being able to jump to different groups of people and being able to chime into combos.
Yeah.
Because if you can just talk to one group of people, that means you're like very niche to who you can talk with. But like if I'm able to go into a room and talk to everybody, then I'm going to be able to get my rounds. So like that was a big thing for me, was definitely being more sociable and understand like human nature.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, and also working three jobs on top of being on the tennis team and going to school and selling your cards as a side hustle. I'm sure each job taught you different skill set, but also maybe taught you that you didn't want to be in somebody else's business. You wanted to be the owner.
And like one thing I definitely learned too is one of my favorite sayings is like when you say yes to something, you say no to something else. Like when I was working so chaotically, like since I told you like, hey, like I don't cook and whatnot, because I neglected like my health for a little bit because I was so busy with school and working, that like between my breaks, like I would just drive through. It was Burger King, McDonald's. Like, that's what I ate for 4 years straight.
Wow.
Like, I literally didn't eat anything else. And it was terrible. And that's when my kidney started, like, having problems. And I always had a kidney disease. That's the whole backstory. But, like, I had IgA nephropathy and I still have it. But, like, that didn't really help me much. All the iced teas and all the sugary drinks that I drank, like, I was basically saying yes to that and, like, no to being broke. But, like, there's always this trade-off that you have when you make decisions. Like, now, obviously, like, you know, I don't eat, like, crap. But like, that's what I did because I didn't have time to go, you know, sit down and grab a table and like maybe have a nice salad. Like I was literally on 15-minute, 30-minute intervals between classes or driving to a job, or like I just didn't have time. I had to do 5-minute drive through, get out, eat it while I was driving. Then when I got to the place, I was done, wrap up the paper, throw it into the seat. And like, that's how I lived. And it was so bad, like so terrible. I don't know. I just like had a different like hustle because like my parents were just so like, we were just so broke. Like, it was so terrible. Like, the difference between a $60 pair of sneakers and $80 was, like, the world.
Wow.
Like, just that small thing. Like, oh, if we got an expensive pair of shoes, like, I was playing basketball. It was one of my things I did when I was a kid. Like, if we bought an 80 pair of sneakers, like, we didn't get to go to dinner that night. Like, we had to eat at home or eat leftovers. Like, that was the difference in going out to eat and getting a small meal at a diner or, like, eating leftovers. And that really hit me. I was like, I never want to feel like that again. It's just like a weird feeling. Like you feel awkward too. Like you hang out with people and you always feel like you're being judged for certain decisions. Like even going to school, like show and tell, like I never had shit to show and tell. Like, whoa. My parents were poor. Like going to show and tell, I used to skip school on Fridays. Like Friday at 3, I would leave the building. Like I used to sneak out the exit sign and I was just chilling. Like there was like a back basketball hoop area to like a trailer, like a trail way, and I used to just walk down there and go through the woods and go home because I was like, I don't have shit to show. Like it's show and tell. Everyone had like cool new toys and shit, and I was like, I don't have anything. So it was like a weird thing to where my biggest association when I was growing up was like, people aren't going to listen to me unless I have money. and people don't want to be around me unless I have money. And like, now I realize that that's not really the case. Like, there's a lot of loving people out there and caring people out there, but that was like a really bad belief system that I like came up with. And, you know, it just sucked. Like, it did a lot of things that I was in my journey to just like make money. Not unethically, but like just saying like I grinded more than being like, hey, like I just need to make a ton of money so people finally listen to me. And I was under that narrative for so long because on top of being broke, like my parents would come home from work and be like, oh, I hate this boss. I hate this person. Like I have to listen to them. They're telling me to come in Saturday or whatever it was. Like I associated and I thought that people who were above others made more money. But sometimes people who are above others don't just make more money, but they're just assholes. And right. like I associated that with like making more money. So I was like, okay, like if I make more money, am I going to be a terrible person? And like I had a lot of blocks. Like it was really bad.
So many blocks.
Yeah, it was so bad. Yeah.
But on the other hand, I think there is something about the grit and determination that you get when you start with less, right? Because people who start with more often don't have that same drive. They might succeed, but they're going to succeed because they already have these connections and they have this and that that helps them get there. But you didn't have that. You had to figure it out for yourself and do whatever you could. But I definitely hear a lot of blocks. So I want to ask, have you been able to overcome those blocks? Because now you clearly, you have money. You have a lot of self-actualization, it seems, at a very young age compared to most entrepreneurs. But when did that shift happen where you realize like, oh, now I have this money. People are listening to me now. But how do you separate that from just people listening, liking you as a person versus you as the successful, you know, millionaire?
So that's the thing is that I think that most people's narratives move towards like monetary reasons, regardless of like what you see, think, or feel. I mean, this could be something where people might not agree with me, but like the way the world's moving right now, like we know that we're on the verge of something really weird changing in like the economy, like narratives. Mm-hmm. People are always going to listen to people who have money because they just attach money to an identity. Like regardless of where the world moves, like that's just the way it is. The news isn't going to talk about somebody who has a net worth of 10 grand. They're going to talk about Elon Musk and all these guys all day long. They don't care about all the smaller people. And that's why the smaller people are more like angry and they have more built up anger. And it's just like, it's a world where I make money. But yeah, I do question that sometimes. Like I do question, hey, are people listening to me because I have money or do they actually just want to listen to Jason? Mm-hmm. And it's this weird like paradigm that I still have to figure out. Like I got past all the blocks of making money, but like the only blocks that I really have left are do people listen to me because it's me or because of the money that I've made? Also, the other blocks are like dating. Like why are people wanting to go on dates with me? Is it because me? Is it because I am funny? Is it because I have humor? Is it because, you know, like whatever it is, like I don't know what that answer is. And it's just a very interesting space to be in because I'm always challenging myself and thinking about things. And it's just like, it's honestly really tough. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, it's something where if I had to choose again, like, yeah, I like where I'm at, but like, I'd rather be like making 30, 40 grand a month again, just being on my own. And I really think about that a lot because I'm like, you know, it's just a weird spot to be in because I'm not like that mature yet. Like, I'm 26. Like, I don't get it yet. Like, I don't know what it feels like to be married or have children or like be a part of a big family. Like my family was always small because everybody on my dad's side and mom's side like almost died off. Like it's just like a weird situation. But I don't know. This is crazy. Like we're going on this. This is a good conversation, by the way, is that I never experienced death up close. And that was one thing that was the craziest thing for me was I was in Orlando and I was making like maybe $15,000 a month or something like that, I think. And I was just a solopreneur. I was trying my hardest just to like not be so bottlenecked and enjoy the fruits of my labor a little bit. I thought 15 grand back then was so much.
Well, and let's be real, to a lot of people,
it is,
be really happy to make 15 or 30 or 40,000 a month.
Yeah. And then I started taking on all these things though, because I was like, oh, like I have money now. I can take on more.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I started biting off more than I can chew. And I got a dog. And I got a dog and like 3 months in, it was this crazy situation, but like 3 months in, this dog, it just would not eat correctly. Like it would eat and then it would get stuck in its like stomach and then it would throw it up as bile. It was this weird situation. And like it was 3 months in and I took it to the vet. We got a bunch of tests and like that was fine. And then it was good for 3 weeks. And then I come home one day and like literally the dog's like purple almost. Like it was just fucking pale. So I was like, all right, we're going to take this thing to the emergency vet. So I go to the emergency vet. And like, this was the moment where I realized that I was actually broke. Like, this was the turning point for me when I just couldn't swallow this one pill. And, you know, I was spending stupid money back then. Like, I wasn't really smart financially because you give a kid who's poor $15,000 a month. Actually, it was a little bit a lot. It was about $8,000 to $9,000. You give a poor kid $8,000 to $9,000 a month, you're basically, you don't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
And like $8,000 to $9,000 a month, when I had $750 in rent, I could spend $200 a day on anything I wanted. I can go shoe shopping. I could go out to eat. I could just have a ball. So I basically brought the dog in and like that was like, yeah, so here's what's going to happen. Like you could either pay for the surgery or you can put the dog down. And like there was a surgery and it was like $9,000.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, yo, I don't have $9,000. I mean, I did, but I just couldn't spend it.
Right.
And that was the day where like I was in the room and like my roommates that were living there were in the same room as me. And I was like, yo, I'm dead ass failing in front of everybody right now. Like I'm not able to make this decision. And I realized that it was because I was just being like a selfish idiot. And I just didn't like, I took on an obligation and I wasn't willing to upload my part of the contract.
Mm.
And I decided to put the dog down because it was cheaper.
Yeah.
And like, it was this situation where like, as soon as I made the choice, I literally cried for probably like 2 hours straight. Like I just couldn't handle it. And then I called my dad and my dad was like, oh, it's the circle of life and all this shit, like trying to validate it. And I was like, dude, I feel like that's not validated. And I just like could not sleep with that. And the crazy part is that the next morning I had to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, drive to Miami to go shoot a client's fucking event. Oh my God, I was distraught. And then what wound up happening was like, yeah, I put the dog down and it was like pretty weird in the house for about a week or two. And I wound up getting another dog 2 years after. And like, I was in a relationship at the time for about a year and a half. And like, that was probably my longest relationship. I know that's not a lot to some people, but like, this is stuff that I'm working on that I'm not really good at. But I was in a relationship for a year and a half and we got a French bulldog and the same situation came up.
Ooh.
So I get a French bulldog, which like you can get ones pretty affordably that. Keep in mind, like I was actually making money. So like it was fine. So I think we paid $7,000 for the dog. So I get the dog, name's Chloe. She was really, really nice. But like, don't worry, she didn't die. So like, this is what basically wound up happening was I was with her and one day we went out to go get dinner and we come back and like, this might be really gross, okay? Yeah. But like my dog's leg is hanging off.
Ooh.
It's on its body. And she's not whimpering at all. Like literally nothing, like she's not crying. And I'm like, dude, our dog broke our leg. Like I'm not our leg, like she broke her leg. Like what the hell are we supposed to do? So then we go to emergency vet and they're like, she broke her femur. And I'm like, how do you break your femur in the house? And I didn't have cameras in the house and stuff. That'd be weird. So I was like, it must have jumped on the chair, jumped again, just hit its leg weird. I don't really know. So that surgery was $11,000. I wind up paying for that because that was like my way of saying like, okay, like maybe I didn't fuck up. I just needed more time to make a better decision.
Mm.
No, it's like the guilt that I lived with. And I got the surgery and then I realized that like I wasn't fit to take care of a dog. So I just gave it to her. And I was like, hey, like, listen, like I'm not fit for this. Like I'm not going to make this mistake again. Like I'm not fit to do this. And I need to know like, where I'm biting off more than I can chew and where my boundaries are. And like, there's just so many weird situations that I've been in. I just figured I'd tell that story because I feel like it might help somebody out. Just kind of think about like when you're not making money, you value money so much. And then like when you make money, you don't care about it as much because you use it to solve problems.
Right.
And it's like an emotional attachment to it. And then like if you make even more, now it's to the point where you just spend it and you don't even care.
Yeah. Yeah, and the problems just change.
Yeah, and or the problems get bigger.
Right.
It's like the universe is watching. It's like, okay, like you get a dog that's cheaper, something bad happens, you can't buy it. But then you get a dog that's more expensive and then you get like it's just, it's always a new problem that is just more expensive. And I feel like you welcome that in when you say yes to making more money and you say no to like being modest about things. Like you open up the doors to just like all the things that encompass it.
The more money, more problems.
Yeah, that is an interesting statement. Like, I truly believe that that's true. Obviously, that's different for everybody. Like, some people can live more modestly. I get that. Some people are massively humble. They'll make millions and still wear Skechers. I mean, I commend those people. I just was never able to get past that. Yeah, I mean, it was just a very interesting time in my life where I had to learn all these things. Like, and I was so selfish because I just wanted to figure out if I was successful or not. Like, I wanted to get that answer from the universe. Like, am I actually doing something right? Am I helping people? Am I monetizing it? Am I even good at it? And like, what the hell am I even doing? And like, I figured it out, but now it's like, okay, yeah, now I'm single and now I'm trying to figure that out. And yeah, there's just so many weird things about that where I'm just like, maybe I should just be more encompassed in my work and not so much in that. And like, I don't know who's really like in my circle for me or whatever the case may be. Like, these are just real things that I think about.
Yeah. And I think these are things, particularly when you have this much success so young, you know, where do you go? Where's up from here? It almost sounds like your work is great, right? But maybe you still have some blocks. You still have some self-work, some self-love to take care of, to attract the right person into your life who's going to just love you for you exactly. Yeah. Who you are, how you are, not because of the money or the success of the job, but just because you're Jason.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're getting into like a little therapy session here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just like one of our biggest core values is like radical transparency. So whenever I get on like podcasts and like do stuff, like I just feel like it's my need to kind of talk about things that maybe some people don't want to talk about.
How did you decide, okay, now I'm going to start this business. I'm going to scale it. How did you find your first client?
Yeah. So I was going through the Ty Lopez course, and I was then starting to make videos online about like, you know, how college is and everything. You don't have to go to school, blah, blah, blah. And this brand Hustle Island reached out and they were like, hey, like, I want to send you free merch and make videos with the merch on and then just tag us. It was like an affiliate thing. So I was like, all right, cool. Like, I'll do it. So they send the stuff in the mail. I get it. I make all these cool videos with it. I send the raw files to Greg, who is the owner. And he winds up like coming back to me 2 weeks after. He's like, dude, I need you to make more. These outperformed all of our current ads. And
oh,
I was like,
gosh.
What the hell is an ad? So I wind up meeting with him for lunch in Connecticut. And like, we're sitting down. He's going through ads manager with me. I didn't even know what any of this stuff was. He's like, hey, man, like, I want you to run these ads for us and just keep making videos. Like, control this ads manager. And I'm like, bro, what the hell is this? I don't even know what I'm doing in here. He's like, I'm like, okay, like, how much you guys want to spend? Like, $5 a day? He's like, no, dude, we spend $2,000 a day. I'm like, $2,000? I was like, I was so money blocked. I was like, oh my God. I was so scared. Like, my hands were shaking, sweaty. And I don't know. Other thing too, like, quick side note was when we were at that dinner, I ordered a Caesar salad. And the guy was like, oh, do you want to add chicken for $8 or whatever? And I was like, nah, I'm good. And Greg's like, dude, stop being a cheap little shit and just get it. It's fine. Like, that was a big money block I had about adding chicken, but side note. So like, he was basically there with me and then he dropped his kids off at the mall across the street.
Okay.
And with his wife, Jill. I still talk to them this very day. They are awesome people. And I was sitting there at lunch. He's like, hey, like, just come work for us. Like, drop your jobs and I'll just fly you around the country. You'll make videos. Fly me around the country. Like, bro, I've never been on a fucking plane before. Like, I'm no... So then he's like, yeah, let's pay you $4,000 a month. I'm like, $4,000 a month? I thought it was a joke. So then like, I'm like, yeah, man, of course. Like at the time, like I didn't understand that. I was like, ah, there's no way. Like he's not gonna pay me. We're in the car. I'm driving back to the mall and I hear my phone. And my phone, like I'm not gonna check it because I don't want to like text and drive while he's in the car. So okay. I drop Greg off. I'm like, hey, man, I seen you. Peace out. I get a $4,000 PayPal. And I was like, bro, this shit's real. So I open the app. I'm thinking it's fake. I'm like, send, like the transfer button. I'm like, send to my bank. So then like it worked. I did instant. And like, it was crazy. And then I'm driving back and he calls me and he's like, yo, I need you to go to Atlantic City. I have a soccer team that you need to film. So I go to Atlantic City and I'm living with the Orlando soccer team in Atlantic City because I guess they had a practice facility up there.
Okay.
So I'm living in the hotel and the team's like, yo, here's your card. Here's your room. I'm like, okay, like, where do I pay? He's like, bro, it's on the team. Like, you don't have to pay for this. I'm like, wait a minute. What is going on right now? So then I start hanging out with the soccer guys and we're going out to drink every night. And I was 19, 20 years old. Keep this in mind.
Yeah.
So I was able to drink underage. Yeah. If someone finds out, I don't really care. But like, yeah, like I was hanging out with the soccer team, having a bunch of fun. And then I got done with that. And then I just kept flying around for the next 11 months. He sold the company. We got like 23,000 paying customers. We did like a little bit over 1.3 mil in 11 months. And then he was like, hey, you know, you got to just go take these skills and take what you learned and go build your own thing. Because I learned about campaign, click funnels, upsells, downsells, all this stuff that I do now. And like low ticket, free plus shipping offers, webinars, like, geez, we ran so many things, Facebook groups, memberships, like it was crazy. So we did all this and then I took all the skills and then that's when I went to Orlando. And then that's when I was building the agency with the local business marketing, pitching them cold outreach, driving to local businesses, pitching in person. And then everything really spiraled from there because using Greg's case study and all that really helped me get in the door.
I'm sure.
So like, yeah, also like being able to go to a business, be like, hey, I know how to build funnels, do email, do upsells, all this. Like they were like, damn, like, fuck it. Yeah, go for it. So it was cool. And that's really how I got it off the ground. Like how I got my first clients was obviously Greg, but that was a weird instance where like, you know, like maybe it is a luck, maybe it's not, whatever it is, like right place, right time. But most of the time the clients were, I would email. So I did cold email and I did cold outreach. So like, and it's both the same thing, obviously, but like cold outreach, I would call local businesses and I would try to set appointments. Cold email, I did a free website offer. And like what I would do is I would say, hey, I'll build your website for free if you let me run your ads and do X, Y, and Z, social media management, get you more views. And then they would reply to the email. And then I would take the domain from their email and I would just drive to the place and be like, hey, you replied to my email. And they're like, what the hell is kids in person? Like, so that's what I did. And it was $500 a month, but I gave you a free website. What I did was I went on Fiverr and I paid someone $100 to refine their entire website. And like this guy I found, he was a master at the shit. Like we would just go on Wix and we would refine the website and it would look so much nicer. All like it was crazy. It was a huge arbitrage back then. Now it's not as cheap for someone on Fiverr to do a website, but that's what I did. I would lose $100 in hopes that I would get the 500. So like, that's what I did. And that was one of my main offers that I ran. And that got me to about 20 clients. Yeah. And like, that was doing well. And then from there, I just started like really doing a lot more networking. Cause I was like, hey, I'm making like 10-ish a month. Like I can like network. Mm-hmm. Like I can like not be so stressed every morning thinking about how I'm going to make money. Like I can actually breathe for a couple of weeks. Like this is great. And that's where I started getting like bigger clients that could pay me $2,000-$3,000 a month and, mm-hmm. and, you know, further. And like, that's really how the journey went. And then from there, it was just like organic content, going to events. I invested in my first mastermind 2 years in. Like, that's when I started like really starting to get into the niche and start to meet new people. Like always having friends in different cities too. That was a huge thing for me. Like if I go somewhere, like right now I'm in Nashville, I could just go, I have dinner plans with a friend that I knew from a mastermind. Like I could always connect with new people and you never know how that's going to like land. And it's just a compounding interest of like being in the niche and being in certain relationships and talking to people. Like people don't realize how much of a compound effect like being in people's heads and building relationships is, not always trying to transact with people. Mm-hmm. Like if you're meeting people, don't just like try to sell people shit. Like I can't stand that. Like people will try to meet up with me and they're like, yeah, like I have this cool software. I'm like, bro, like just eat dinner. Like I don't care about your software right now. Like it's this thing where I had to learn it the hard way because I was so encompassed in that. Like I would go to events and just try to sell people. I'm like, wait. And then one person one day came and goes, dude, you can't just like come to events and sell people.
Right.
It's like, oh, I thought this was what the hell we're doing. He's like, no, you're an idiot. Like you have to network and talk to people. And I was like, okay, like I'll do that instead. And like, that was my wake up call. Everything in my life that I did wrong, I needed like a wake up call or a piece of trauma to get me to stop doing stupid stuff.
Clearly.
And yeah, like, and it's crazy because when you're doing it intrinsically, you just actually make more. Like, if you don't sell and you provide massive amounts of value, people just come to you regardless. You're like a magnet.
Yeah.
So that's just how I operate from here on out. Like, I don't sell anything.
Well, I mean, I just think about like LinkedIn and how many people want to connect with you, or I get connection requests all the time. And usually it's because they want me to hire them or they want to sell me something. And they don't even try at all to like, do anything. I'm like, you really don't understand marketing and sales if you just come in here and like come at me like that.
The crazy thing is like LinkedIn and stuff, like my inbox is just full of crap. And the crazy thing is that people always think that that stuff works.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, first of all, you're coming from an angle of they have no idea what you do and they're not even looking at what you're pitching. So like your conversion rates are just so asinine. Like, I just don't understand. Like, that's why I run ads, because I can control the ecosystem. So, like, that's just my biggest thing. Like, if I'm going to wake up in the morning, I better wake up to leads who know who I am. I'm not just going to, like, throw out 300 messages on LinkedIn and just, like, pray that someone knows who I am. Like, that's just, no. And that's why I also got into ads. Like, that's why I kept doing it, because I said, hey, regardless of where the economy's at, businesses still need customers.
Absolutely.
Like, regardless of where they're at. So I'm like, okay, like this is a good niche. But if I was in like websites and branding, like it's kind of tough, but you got to attach paid ads. You have to.
Yeah.
So it's this tough scenario. Like if I was just building a website, that's tough. Because they could be like, oh, like before you rebuild my website, I need more customers though, Jason. I'm like, dude, I don't do paid ads. Or it was this thing where there's like other niches that really scared me. Like, oh yeah, email. Like, yeah, you could do email marketing, but like if you don't fill up your list and bring new customers, then the list can only make you so much money for so long. Like if you have a list of 10,000 people and you email them every day and you ran ads before, that list might last 3 to 6 months the most. And then it's going to start to be like, oh, where's new people on the list? Paid ads. And that was the thing where I was like, if I'm going to have a fire of a business, I got to put gas on it and keep the fire running, which is just pay traffic.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that was always like my biggest thing was always sitting there going, if I can pull a lever on traffic and say how much I want for how much money, then I'll never have to worry about money again. And that was always a niche that I wanted to be in.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. One, I'm a total believer in integrated marketing, right? So you have to have paid, but you also have to have a great website because people are going to see your ads, are going to go. And if your website and your social media don't say the same thing as your ads, they're not going to trust you and they're just going to, you're going to turn them off immediately. Yeah. And then you're spending all this money and you're not converting.
Yeah. And that's what I like really depict as like the selling ecosystem. It's like you have organic, you have paid, you have podcasts, you have your actual content, you have press, you have accolades, like all of these things encompass a selling ecosystem. So yeah, I mean, paid ads just exposes if your organic is good.
Right.
So like,
that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah. Like anything in my business that I had to solve problems with, I was like, hey, if we just run more ad spend, I'm going to find out what my other problems are. Like last week, this was the funniest thing ever, but like we never did this stuff. We had a client who was going to spend 10 grand a month with us. And he was like, yeah, I'm not buying because you don't have a lot of people tagging you on LinkedIn as employees. Yeah. And I'm like, how the hell did you think of that objection? He's like, I don't even work for you. I'm like, 52. He's like, why do only 24 people say they work at Wojo Media then? I'm like, I don't know. Like, we don't do that stuff. Like, we don't look at people and be like, oh, yeah, show me your LinkedIn. Like, we don't do that. We interview you in a three-way system. Our interview process is first call is morals and ethics.
Mm.
Second call is situational, and third is tactical. And then we give you an offer at the end, and then you see what you want to do.
Nice.
So like, that's how we do it. And like, we never do the whole thing like, hey, when you get hired, we don't give you like a pamphlet where it's like, hey, like go to LinkedIn and put us in your bio. It's like, no one really thinks of that. So we lost money from that guy because we didn't have all our like team members logged us in LinkedIn. And I was like, okay, next objection, we have to slash. So then Casey's in the Slack chat like, all right, guys, all go to your LinkedIn's and add Wojo Media. Lost that contract. Like, it's crazy. So paid ads just exposes things. Like the more questions we get or the more objections, we just plug the holes. It's honestly insane. Like we've gotten objections from people where it's like my logo on my Google, my business profile. They're like, oh, your logo looks sketchy. I'm like, no, it's an icon. Are you, like, you talking about? So now we put the logo on the icon and the name underneath. So that I'm like, every single thing we run paid traffic, we always find a new solution. So that's why I always look at paid ads.
Yeah.
It's good.
But those people probably would not be clients that you'd want to work with because they'd be pains anyway. Let's be real about that. But
and that's the thing too, is like, I'm not trying to please everybody. But some of them are like these corporate people. Like they're just like, oh God, like this was a financial firm. And they have 400 employees. They have a partnership with a medical billing company. Like these are the people that care about stupid crap like that. Like I'm not going to look at a company and say, oh, your logo's tilted or slanted. Like no one cares. Like I'm looking at reviews. I'm looking at if your services are competitive. What are your deliverables? And does the price point make sense for my KPIs? And that's what I look at. I don't look at their logo. Who cares? So it's like, I don't know. It's weird.
What kind of clients do you like to work with? Because you said you started out with like going to small businesses, local businesses, like local SEO and local ads, right? And then I'm imagining that's transitioned some.
Yeah. So now it's mostly like coaches, consultants, service providers, or high ticket business owners, than e-com stores. Because most of the coaches and consultants that we work with, they always have a low ticket offer or a book funnel.
Mm-hmm.
Low ticket has been probably one of the biggest things that I've been a part of, like self-liquidating funnels. Like I run self-liquidating funnels for probably some of the biggest people in the online space that everybody follows. I can't discuss names, but like those guys all run book funnels or $7 low tickets to upsells, downsells, back-end sales team calling, and then selling high ticket or selling event tickets because it's easy to get them ROI. I self-liquidate all your front-end ad spend, and then your sales team just picks up the rest, and they're all free leads. It's all free. So instead of running to a book call funnel and you're spending all the money in front loading, why don't we sell a $27, $37, get them to spend it, then book a call, you're getting the same lead.
Right.
So that's where I got to self-liquidating funnels, and like that allows to have retention higher. With service business owners, I'm talking like high ticket home service. Anything that if I sell one client, they could pay us for 2 to 3 months. So like if you're a solar, I'll get you one client, then you're good for like 2 months, 3 months.
Right.
So I have 90 days to get you one client. Like I have to be literally like lost in the sauce to not be able to do that. And then e-com is good because it's more scalable. E-com is something where like you just have inventory. Yes, there's people who don't have a crazy amount of cash. I get it, but it's more scalable in the sense that like if you have 40,000 in inventory, I can sell it out and you'll have the cash deposit in 2 days to go make another inventory, or you can leverage that and future date it for credit lines to buy inventory or like whatever it looks like. So I just always wanted to be in niches like that to where it wasn't like also coaches and consultants, if they're taking sales calls on their own, mm-hmm. it's tougher. Like if they have a sales team, I'm game because that's mm-hmm. something that can scale and like it's predictable systems and processes to where it's like way more scalable. But like the other thing that I've been doing is looking at like webinars and like stuff like that, because here's the thing, like people for years thought that webinars were dead and they're like, right. oh, you know, webinars aren't this thing anymore. I'm like, no, I think you just suck at sales. Yeah. Like I'm thinking mm-hmm. like, why is this so difficult for you? I don't know. It's just like, that's the thing too, is that's very scalable and people don't realize that, because I can get 500 people on a live and like it's game over. And a lot of the people in the space that I work with, they run webinar funnels to ticket sales. And this is like a really little known thing that people don't realize is like the biggest things that I've seen in the space right now that are shifting is the loss of human connection. So like, what does that mean, right? We have to run more events. People don't realize that like all the biggest people in the space, they are telling you sell a book and sell this course. And like what they're really doing is like, they're just selling that to get you in person to sell you a $100,000 ticket item. And that's where the real money is. Like every single funnel I run, I'm like, hey, what are we selling on the back end? And they're like, tickets. I'm like, well, fuck, everyone's doing this. So because people in person who buy, it's higher lifetime value. They're just higher lifetime value people. They're easier to sell also. And like they also sell other people in the room and they give you more referral. Like when I run events, we have a day three upsell where like they do the 2 days, and then day three, if they buy a package, we record their ads in person day three.
Oh.
And what happens is, this is so funny. So like what happens is if they bring somebody with them day three and they buy, I just give them $1,000 back. So wow. like they're all in the same city. So like if they go and then they bring a friend to the house, I'm like, hey, you get the same price and you get your $1,000 back. And like, it's a sexy offer. It's all about having good offers too. That's one thing I wanted to add is like all these things that I run on direct response, it's all because the offers are really sexy. You got to have a sexy offer or the whole thing falls apart, because either your fulfillment's trash, but if you don't have a good offer, then it's like you're not systemizing the actual back end. So like the offer has to be really sexy on the front end. And that's the thing I've seen that's worked really, really well.
What about people who don't know what to offer for their low ticket item? Do you help them craft?
Yeah, I have a cool offer for that. Maybe one person will hear this and it might hit them. So like I have a cool offer with low ticket where I will work with them on like a results driven basis, because low ticket is something that's like really sexy for people. And what I do is I help you craft it, but like you have to create it obviously because it's your expertise. But like I help you craft it. We do the funnel. We do basically all the upsells and downsells. You got to make them, but we craft them. We do all the branding and design. And like we have this thing where we just charge like 10K. And then once you recoup your 10 grand, then you pay 3,000 a month. So not until you recoup your investment, then you're paying 3 grand a month there on out. And it's like the sexiest thing that people buy. So like that's worked really well for us, because people like the results driven promise, because we can be running it for 4 months. And like it's used as napping. Like let's say we suck and we run it for 4 months and then it takes us 4 months. You got 4 months of services for free, technically, because the setup fee is just part of getting the whole funnel done. So that's something that's worked really, really well. But like, yeah, I mean, like crafting the offer and stuff, it's all about giving your avatar a quick win. Like, what can I give my avatar to get them excited? Like, if I'm a sales coach, my low ticket offer is, here's my sales script that's made 18 million on the phone. It's fill in the blank, copy and paste here. That's sexy. $7, $15, whatever. You get them in, then you sell them, here's my objection handling scripts, fill in the blank or word for word, whatever. The next page is something else, pre-framing, show rates, like all that. So that would be something where you could just lead them through a customer journey. And then at the end of that funnel, there's a thank you page with a book call. And then they're booking a call and then you're selling sales coaching. So it's like, it's a lot more scalable that way. Plus, it helps out your, like, people don't realize this, but the reason why, too, a lot of people run low ticket is because, let's say you sell 100 people on high ticket. I mean, to be honest, I don't care, like, how less revenue or more revenue you make. There's always going to be one or two people who are a pain, right? You sell high ticket, two or three. What if those people do a chargeback? Your payment processor is gone.
Thanks, yeah.
So with that being said, like, with 100 people, I want to lessen my chargeback rate. So I run low ticket to get more purchases on my payment processor so that my chargeback rate's lower. Like if one person comes to the funnel on 100 low, like high tickets and they do a chargeback, I'm screwed because it's a 1% chargeback. You get a 1.25, your thing's gone. So yeah, you can get a more high risk merchant. I get that. You can go 3% on Easy Pay Direct and other things, but like still 3%, that's 3 out of 100. Like if your fulfillment sucks, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you're selling BizOp, your chargeback rates are higher. So, like, it's this thing where I was going to these guys. And I'm like, yo, we have to offset, like, your stuff because your chargeback rate's way too damn high. So, yeah, I mean, it was just this thing where I was like, hey, like, if we get 100, 200 people a day to buy this, maybe two, maybe one does a chargeback, maybe. Low ticket, they don't do it, though, because it's, like, $7. They don't care. So that's where I was able to offset that and help them be more scalable because their email list was full of buyers, not freebie seekers.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to stop there because I want people to be able to go to your website and we're sending them to jasonrunsads.com/scale.
Yep.
Yep. So I want people to go to you for more of your advice because obviously you spent a lot of time researching, figuring out all of these different models, how to scale. And we could probably talk for hours and still have a lot more to say. So going to leave a little taste for the audience and I really, really appreciate, Jason, how radically honest and authentic you are and that you're willing to share like, hey, yeah, I have success, but here's all the other stuff I'm still dealing with in my life. Sometimes people want to come on and they only want to show the nice stuff and I want to get into the gritty.
So, I appreciate it. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, enjoy where you are. And I know that you've given us a lot to think about, whether it's me and the audience. Whether you're watching or listening to this episode, don't forget to give us a rating, review, like, follow, subscribe, tell your friends. And I'll be back again with another amazing expert in a few days with some advice for you to make your business even better.
Want more? Check out amplifywithannika.com or follow me on socials at amplifywithannika.
As we close out today's episode, I want to thank Simplified again for making it possible. For all marketers and creators out there, Simplified is your ally in effortlessly crafting on-brand content with design and video AI. Discover how AI can enhance your creative process at simplify.com. Start for free and elevate your content game. Thanks for listening, and here's to your next creative breakthrough.